your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Spaceman.
David Britton from Stardome.
Oh, I'm in shock and awe.
Our very own spaceman.
That was impressive. I wasn't expecting that.
Oh, there you go. That's BFM for you, mate.
Oh, thank you. Merry Christmas to you too.
Yeah, and a Happy New Year as well. And just, you know, Merry Easter and Boo for Halloween and whatnot.
Yeah.
Now, David Britton, Andrea Ghez has won a Nobel Prize for Physics for discoveries about black holes.
Well, that's right. There were three scientists, I think, got the Nobel Prize for Physics. They received it last week. The first is Roger Penrose from the UK. He got half the prize. He was able to show that black holes should exist, working from the theory of relativity from Einstein. Einstein himself didn't think it was possible, but only 10 years after he died, Penrose was able to show that they should exist, and of course black holes have been shown to be out there by a great multitude of them. The other half of the prize was shared by Andrea Ghez and Reinhard Genzel, one from the United States and Genzel from Germany. The interesting thing about Andrea Ghez is she's only the fourth woman to have ever received the Nobel Prize in Physics. The first, of course, was Marie Curie. She received it for the discovery of, or the theory of radioactivity, and eventually died as some of the effects of that.
There's a recent sort of blockbuster movie, actually, featuring the lady that played the person in Gone Girl with Ben Affleck, whose name I've forgotten. I think she's playing Marie Curie in that movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'll
it looks interesting. It's like radioactive something, like the name is like a play on radioactivity. So, yeah, check that out.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for that. Yeah. Mm. The second one was an American theoretical physicist who came up there with the idea of a nuclear shell for an atomic nucleus. Donna Strickland, to do with pulses of laser light, which became widely applicable, and the fourth one I said, Andrea Ghez. So what Andrea and Reinhard Genzel wasn't her collaborator. In fact, they discovered and found this independently in completely different continents.
Wow.
And so what they were looking for was to see what was at the center of our Milky Way, our galaxy. But to do it, they had to develop methods of seeing through huge clouds of gas and dust. The center of the Milky Way is very dense, much denser than where we are in our solar system. And so by developing the telescope techniques to do that, they're able to show there were these stars that were whizzing around some unseen object. I mean, they were whizzing around like a million kilometers an hour. Just mind-boggling velocities, and they're able to calculate that what is at the center there is something a bit over 4 million times heavier than our sun. So that's our supermassive black hole.
Okay, so it's not nougat. There you go. Everybody been getting it wrong this whole time.
Yeah. So that's what she got it for, along with the guy from Europe. Only the fourth woman ever for physics Nobel.
How many Nobel Prizes do they give out annually for physics? Is it just like three or four?
No, it's I think it's just one, but it can be shared.
Okay.
That's my understanding. Yeah, so this prize was 10 million kroner. Penrose gets 5 million and the other two get 2.5 million kroner each. So 10 million kroner is about $1.2 million US dollars.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Now, astronomers are hoping the UN can help them out protecting dark skies from all these satellites that are being shot up for commercial purposes, I'm guessing?
The mega constellations that are being put up at the moment by SpaceX, the Starlink constellations that people have been moaning about streaking across the sky, and they're launching them at the moment pretty much every month, sometimes more than one launch a month, and each launch sends up around about 60 satellites. But there are other companies wanting to do the same. Amazon has a Kuiper, K-U-I-P-E-R is the name of their constellation, but they haven't launched any yet. OneWeb is another one. They've sent up 74, but they have recently gone through bankruptcy and have been bought out by another consortium, including the UK government. So, I mean, what we're talking about is the possibility of 100,000 spacecraft if they all send up all the things that they want to, and it looks like they'll probably be allowed at this stage. Now, a lot of these, once they're up there, won't be visible to us and, you know, to you and me, not to naked eye, but when you're talking about astronomical professional observatories, those telescopes see things that are so much fainter, and so it is a growing problem. So what they had was an online workshop last week called Dark and Quiet Skies for Science and Society. By quiet, what they're talking about there is dark means visible light. Quiet skies means radio waves. So we can't see radio waves, but you can amplify them and hear them. So that's what they're getting at there. So radio telescopes get affected just as much as visible light telescopes. So that was organized by the United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs and the International Astronomical Union. So it really is at the top echelons of what we're talking about here. And they're putting together a report that will be submitted to the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. What they're wanting to do is persuade the authorities and the manufacturers, like SpaceX, to do a few things. Firstly, to make the spacecraft as dim as possible so they don't reflect much light. Keep their altitudes below about 600 kilometers, because in higher orbits, the satellites reflect the sun for longer periods and therefore visible through more of the night. It also takes longer for dead satellites at higher orbits to actually fall back to Earth and burn up, so they are a problem for a longer period of time. So that's the state of play at the moment. None of them are wanting to see, you know, 100,000 of these things up there. But, I mean, there's a strong case for, you know, the efficiency and the good things that comes out of these sort of constellation of satellites and improving communications on Earth in remote places and in poor countries.
I've seen an image on the internet of from a telescope which is sort of tracking these satellites on the night sky, and they're almost creating like a grid of straight lines across the night sky over the course of the evening. So it must disrupt some sort of, you know, if you are looking out for things like asteroids or comets.
Well, and of course anything fainter than that as well. They're only visible when the sky is dark, like after sunset or before sunrise, but also when the sun shines on them. So when they're close to the Earth, they go into the Earth's shadow, and you can actually see satellites at night after sunset, before sunrise at the moment, going across, and they'll be going across the sky, and then they'll just blink out. The same with the space station. And they blink out because they've gone into Earth's shadow. But the higher a satellite is, the longer it'll be in the sky before it reaches that shadow. So they're not in the sky all night, but the amount of time they are and the number that they're up there is increasing, so it is gradually affecting ground-based telescope observations more and more.
Now I'm going to have a crack at pronouncing this. Orionids meteor shower?
That's it, the Orionids. All the meteor showers, the name of the constellation they appear in, ending with IDS. So this is in the constellation of Orion. It's on at the moment. By meteor shower, we mean extra meteors in the night sky that you wouldn't normally see. So it might be, you know, one every 5 or 10 minutes, maybe a bit more than that. It does vary. So these are the remnants of bits and pieces of comet that have been left behind by comets going around the sun. This one you'll see in the north east before sunrise, from about 2 a.m. to twilight in the northeast there, and they will appear to come from a point, one single point in the sky near the constellation of Orion.
Mm-hmm.
So the peak is next week on the 22nd. That's when they'll be most frequent. The good thing with this one is there's no moon pretty much. It's on the other side of the sky, so the moon won't be affecting, so even the faint one should be visible. This will continue till about early November.
Nice. So what else is happening in the night sky at the moment?
Well, I mentioned the moon, so we've got next couple of weeks. There's a very skinny moon at the moment. New moon's on the 17th. So, yeah, really dark skies until sort of the middle of next week, which is good. After sunset, over in the west, we've got Mercury very low. In the northwest, really high above, not quite 90 degrees, about 60, 70 degrees, Jupiter and Saturn. But less than a hand width apart and very bright and very much worth looking out for. And in the morning, Venus is low in the east. One thing that we've got right now is Mars is closer now than it will be for the next 15 years. It's when the Earth comes in the inner track between the Sun and Mars. So it's the best time to be seeing Mars right now. So it's in the sky after sunset over in the east. Pretty low, but it's in the sky the whole night and in the morning before sunrise over in the northwest. So the best viewing is really between today and the 18th, the rest of this week, from about 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. But what we're doing at Stardome is having a week of Mars. It's Te Wiki o Matawhero. So there are live presenter-led planetarium shows that we're showing there. So this is tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday nights. There's none on Saturday night, unfortunately. So there'll be telescope viewing, as long as the clouds and the weather cooperate. And there'll also be really amazing photographs of Mars and mini documentaries running at the same time.
All right. So it's your best chance to see Mars for the next 15 years.
Old mate Mars,
You can see it at the Stardome.
Well, you can see it at home, but when we have some big telescopes, which does help.
Strong brag.
You can see Mars naked eye, but to see some detail on it, you need a telescope. And the best time to see it is when it's up close, which is what it is at the moment.
Yes.
Every 2 years this happens, but it's not as close as it is now. So the next time in 2 years' time, it'll be a bit further away, and 2 years after that, a bit further away.
So
it's not till 2035, it'll be about as close.
This
as
is the closest it's going to be for 15 years. Okay.
Yeah.
We've got a family pass to give away for
Thursday. Is Matawhero the word for Mars? The Te Reo word for Mars?
That's right.
That is fucking wild.
Well done. Yep.
Mint. I like that. Yeah, if anyone wants to go and have a look, have a good little squiz at Old Mate the Red Planet. We do have a Thursday, the 15th of October. That's this week, of course. We'll get the whole family along. Good way to blow the little minds.
Get in quick because the tickets are selling pretty quickly.
Well, to be honest, we're actually giving away a ticket right now, David. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But to the others who don't get that one.
No, fair enough.
A family pass, 2 adults, 3 children. Does that sound about right?
It does.
Okay, awesome.
Thank you very much.
Hey, David, always a pleasure to speak with you. We will speak to you in a fortnight's time.
I look forward to it.
Okay, cheers.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.